I always like to give this thing a few seconds of like just background noise and quiet anyways.
Yeah.
Because, well, A, I can filter that out. Haha. And B, also, if it's going to like fail to write to the card, it's going to be in the first like 20 seconds. So.
Amazing.
Should be good now. So feel free.
Queens. Cool. We hold it like this. Is this fine? Does it need to be closer? We can put our heads right next to each other.
We literally sleep 3 feet away from each other. So
maybe if I boost your volume, but not mine. There, I think that might work. We'll find out.
Well, we'll
you
see.
You may have to pass it back and forth a little bit, but...
That's fine.
Whatever. I level it out at the end anyways, so...
Cool.
Ha-ha! Win! Well, welcome back to the Scouting Stuff podcast. This one was recorded in Kandersteg, although obviously that jamboree has since wrapped up. Hearing this long after I've gotten home from Switzerland and had a chance to catch up on sleep. And the laughter you're hearing off the other mic is not Scouter Colin, my usual compatriot, but rather I'm sitting down with two of the volunteer staff here at Kandersteg. Laura, who is a U.S.-based, what scouting organization? Are you out of the BSA?
I'm out of the BSA, so okay. I'm a Cub Scout leader, and I do stuff at our council level, too.
Brilliant. And I'm also sitting down with Samantha, a.k.a. Sam, who's from Canada.
Hello.
And Sam, we have sort of an indirect connection because, of course, you know, you're friends with Morgan McKinney, yep. Who was a scouter with my daughter's scout group for several years and still comes back to do like ski instruction for them.
I love Morgan. I also know Morgan.
Laura also knows Morgan. Well, it's a small world after all.
Yeah. 6 degrees of separation in the scouting world.
Yeah. Oh, man. Less. Well, okay. I think actually you could maybe, I wonder if Morgan could be like the Kevin Bacon of the scouting world because my daughter was in the SDG tent and there's that one board where like, you know, you pin where you're from and no one had really gotten much of Canada yet. So like our Calgary scout pinned Calgary and then the Toronto guys pinned Toronto. And then like Ella actually spent too much time looking at Google Maps trying to make sure that her Edmonton pin was just like perfect. But the Australian who was pinning where he was from at the time.
Dell.
Leaned, Dell knows Morgan too.
Yeah. He asked her and yeah, she was just kind of half freaked out and half amused by that. So it's a small scouting world sometimes.
Yep.
So anyways, you two are what is colloquially known as pinkies.
Yes.
Now, you're not in pink shirts, as you sometimes see on the Kandersteg website, but the neckers you're wearing do have a pink border to them. Yeah. And that is kind of the nickname that staff at the Kandersteg International Scout Center are known by. And so thank you, Sam, for, roping Laura into this. you know, nice to have a wingman sometimes, wingwoman. But... I thought it would be interesting to do a little episode about like who the pinkies are, how you become one, because my daughter's already asking me questions about that, and you know what the pinky life is like. So, I guess first off, maybe we'll start with you know Laura and then move on to Sam. Like, when did you get here, and how long are you here for?
What day did we get here? The 29th, 30th of May.
Yeah.
One of those days. Time doesn't exist at Kandersteg.
I've noticed.
And so we're both here for 3 months as short-term staff for the summer season of this year. So our season ends on the September 1st. So we're here for 3 months.
Okay. And so Sam, you came over at the same time then?
Yeah. We actually planned that we would show up at the same time so we could take the train in together.
Nice.
Because we have other scouting friends also in common.
Okay. I guess I should maybe just before we get even further down the pinky rabbit hole is like, how much comment, like how well do you know each other and like how far back do you go?
So should we start the day we got our letters from the center?
Hard to start.
So we got notice from the center in what, mid-February? Yeah. It was like mid-February that we had been accepted as short-term staff. And so I posted on my Instagram story, basically a countdown until I was back at Kandersteg. And
just because I don't know if I'm getting all of Sam. There we
go. Our mutual friend, Siobhan, who I know from World Jamboree in 2019, messaged me that Sam was also going to be on staff this summer. And I think within 2 hours of you waking up, probably, because I live on the East Coast of the U.S., I had a friend request from Sam. And
nice.
Probably, what, end of March, April, mid-April, we started talking more, probably closer to every day about, like,
Everything.
Yeah.
What we're packing, what we want to do, like things we're excited about, things we were worried about. Just.
Wow.
Yeah. And then
planning to get here at the same time. And then I waited in the Zurich airport for like 4 hours because your flight got delayed.
An Air Thanks, Canada Air flight Canada. Got delayed?
I know, shocking.
I'm floored.
Yeah. And then, yeah, we ended up coming together and turns out we get along amazingly well.
Clearly.
And then we're roommates.
Even better.
Yeah. So we are, as they say at KISC, living the dream.
Wow. That's awesome, right? Because like a year ago, you didn't even know each other. Yeah. And now, you know, I would have swear you'd been like besties for years. Yeah. So
honestly. To be fair, we did technically meet at World Jamboree in 2019. Like, I just didn't remember.
I don't think I remember. Okay. Until key pieces were reintroduced to my mind. And I was like, oh, right.
That was you.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. That is utterly amazing. And I mean, I guess it kind of goes to show, you know, my wife always used to get really annoyed with me at like family functions because I'm actually a total wallflower, right? And it takes me forever to warm up to people. But she'd get frustrated because like I could show up at an event with a bunch of scouters I never knew, you know, before that point. And it was like I'd known them for 15 years already. And I think that is sort of like the magic of the scouting movement. If you've been in it for a while, it is instantly easy. Like it's just, you have that instant commonality with people. And, you know, I mean, you can still have personality clashes, but like, you know, the scouting movement as a thing to have in common is, it's really binding, or it can be. And then, you know, everything just kind of clicks after that.
Yeah.
Okay. So met not even a year ago, got on the same volunteer program, the same
season.
There we go. That's the word I was looking for. Schedule, whatever season. And so now you're here. And what does that entail? So like, I mean, and I guess that's maybe a loaded question, or maybe it's too broad of a question, because I kind of get the sense that pinkies are basically like the everything of Kandersteg. Yeah.
Do you want to go first on this one?
Sure. So as pinkies, like, we do essentially run the center. We are on the program team. You have to understand, summer is apparently a whole different beast than any other time at the center. We are part of the largest short-term staff cohort they've ever had.
Wow.
Because there's almost 40 of us. And in the, like, the spring and the winter and the fall, like, it's much smaller numbers. But you kind of get separated into groups after a while, after like our general staff training. And so there's guest services and then there's program. And within that, they also separate you further. So in guest services, you could be on like shop or chalet services and catering and also campsite. And then within program, there are activity guides, which I am, hiking guides, which is what Laura is, and then climbing guides as well.
Which is what our third roommate does.
Okay.
And so, like, within that, we do all have different roles, but we also, you know, like, part of the spirit of scouting, like, we all help out. So, like, if there's short staff in other sections, we go help out. If there's a day where there's not program for one of us to run, we offer our help to other spaces. So like sometimes we go to campsite or sometimes we go to catering just if they need help.
Okay. And I guess maybe it would also be helpful because in addition to the Pinkies that are here, like there's numerous ISTs, but I'm assuming that the ISTs basically show up as like event specific staff.
Yeah. So this year for Candor 100, they put out an open call for IST. And so there's now 200 staff members, for the event. And so they came in, I don't even remember what day because time doesn't exist here. And they had like a week of training. And so a lot of the short, like program short-term staff helped with the training because we've been doing the activities for a month and a half now.
Right.
So, and then we rolled into Candor 100 and we're running program for literally every group of guests every day.
1600 people from 62 countries is what they keep saying, so
yep,
that's it's a big number. And so I actually, maybe that's so IST, because we're just throwing acronyms left and right here because, you know, it's all inside baseball talk. IST, International Service Team, if I have that correctly.
Yes.
So this would sort of be a separate corps of volunteers that would show up again for like event specific situations. So like I was IST at WJ 2007. Mm-hmm. Now I'm here as a scouter leading scouts. So, you know, different roles. Is there sort of a, there's got to be then a fairly pronounced distinction in the amount of training that like an IST would receive versus a quote permanent staff unquote, or like a Pinky would receive, or is it about the same?
So we had a week of general training at the beginning of our season, and then because it's summer, once they broke us up into teams as program staff, we then had two additional weeks of program-specific training. So for me, that was learning all of the hikes that we run and doing them twice, and learning more about the environment and being able to have discussions with groups that we're taking about the flora and fauna of the area and being able to tell the difference between different plants and being able to talk a lot about the Alps and just the environment that we're in.
Okay. So are you going to be leading the Doldenhorn Hut hike?
No.
No, you're not doing that.
It's a great hike.
It has cheese and meat at the end.
It's, oh, good.
Great.
Yeah.
And pickles.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, I look forward to that one then.
Yeah.
Assuming it's not pouring down rain. But anyways. And okay, so that's how you would have gotten trained for hike and versus program. I guess you would have learned to run the different program areas.
Yeah, so there's a few hikes that we lead as activity guides. So one of them being Doldenhorn Hut. It's like,
oh, it's, so you're taking me.
No, oh, okay. I'm only doing challenge activities during Candor 100.
Okay.
But so we would do our few hikes twice so that we can be assessed on them. And then I learned about all of the workshops that we host here. There's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then also our challenge activities. So they, you know, make sure we know how to belay and tie all of our knots and set everything up so that it can be as safe as possible.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I mean, that's good. Cause like, it's funny, like when we were setting up this interview, we were kind of playing messenger tag and, you know, I ended up kind of blundering into a feedback session in the SDG tent over there, the Sustainable Development Goals. Or the global goals, or the branding kind of shifts now and again. Lovely setup, wonderful. My scouts enjoyed it immensely. But yeah, like it seemed to be some sort of feedback session that I kind of got roped in on.
Sorry.
But no, that's fine because it was actually kind of informative because like one of the lady I ended up sitting next to like had obviously been staff at some point prior. She'd been a Pinky, I think she said like 4 years ago. And, you know, she had some pointed thoughts to share about, you know, some things that she had observed during her time on staff. And I think I said this already, but just to, you know, clarify, like you're all here as volunteers and aren't paid positions. So you're giving up, you know, a few months of career, of possibly education, you know, depending on where you're at in life when you're not here and what you're up to when you're not here, you know, there could be potentially a number of things that, you know, you're essentially putting on hold for those 3 months.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming, though, that like the center is at least taking care of room and board and, you know, God forbid any medical stuff comes up, but...
Yeah, so the main benefits of being a Pinkie is that you have to pay to get here and you pay to go home, but they give you accommodations and they feed you.
Mm-hmm.
And like if you want to do other things outside of work, you have to pay for that as well. But it's just they feed you and they give you accommodations. And we also have accident insurance.
Yeah, so any – so I think it's – we have accident insurance specific through the center, but like general like travel insurance is on our own. So if we were to get hurt or anything were to happen while we were out on our activity or something were to happen in the kitchen or on the campsite, all of our medical stuff is covered by the center.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, these are all good things to know for anybody who is curious to, you know, volunteer their time. Mm-hmm. Because it does seem like an absolutely amazing opportunity, not just because of the history of Kandersteg, but, you know, because like in a way this is sort of like, darn wind, kind of like a culmination of, you know, this seems like, you know, one of those milestones or like these peaks in a scouting career is to come here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like what made you decide to put your name in the hat?
So I guess that goes back to World Jamboree, I think, for me. So I went to 2019 World Jamboree, and that's the first place I heard about Kandersteg, because a lot of the people that I worked with had been Pinkies before.
Mm.
And so I finished undergrad in the spring of 2020. What a great time to finish undergrad and go into the workforce. And then... last summer, I was supposed to go to the Moot in Ireland, and then that got canceled. And since my parents are also scouters, they were also supposed to go to the Moot as IST. And we had already, my dad and I had already put in for time off ahead of time. And we were like, well, what are we going to do? So we decided to come to Kisk for a week. And then this, like when I got back from Kisk, like working in an office just sucks sometimes.
It is a hard transition.
And I got to do more on my like council level and with my cubs and realized that that was something that I really enjoyed doing. So kind of on a whim, kind of not, I just like threw my name in the hat and then promptly decided to forget that I had applied and didn't tell anybody except my parents and like a close group of scouters, because like I didn't know if I was gonna get it, and like I didn't know if they would accept members of the BSA for the summer because it's Kander 100. And it was one of those things where it was like, okay, I've done this, let's just forget about it and see what happens.
Move on. Keep going.
Yeah.
And then so, you got an email one day.
Yeah. And then I woke up to an email one day, and the only thing that I read on the email before calling my dad, because he was already on his way to work, I heard him close the garage door, was, we have the pleasure to inform you. And I read no further than those words before I called my dad at 5 a.m.
The only info you needed.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
Yeah. Did not say regret. We're good.
Yeah. So, and went in that day, basically told work that I'd be leaving for 3 months, dropped my work status to basically take a leave of absence.
Wow.
And here I am.
Jeez. And how about you?
So I also have lots of friends who have been Pinkies. Some of them are the same people. And I have an educational background in outdoor recreation.
Oh.
And I love outdoor education, and I have many jobs in outdoor education.
Perfect.
And just a very passionate person when it comes to scouting.
You're a professional scout.
Yeah. That is what I like to call myself sometimes. And I actually, after WJ in 2019, I did apply and I was accepted for summer of 2020.
Ah.
And then I got an email saying, sorry, you can't come, but apply for whatever you want and we'll take you. So after, you know, all of the changes that came between 2020 and now, and I ended up getting married, and I bought an apartment, and I
just a few things.
I now work a 9-to-5 job at an office. Like, life is very different for me. But I still desperately wanted to come here. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, talked to my partner, and my work gave me a leave of absence, and I'm here living the dream.
Wow. And I mean, a great time to come, you know, to celebrate the centenary of the center, right in time for the big jamboree. And it's interesting that, you know, both of you learned about it kind of through word of mouth, which is how I learned about it too, through Morgan, actually, because, you know,
of course,
as one does.
Naturally.
Yeah.
She loved it here.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, because she's still like, you know, where on my formal uniform, I would have like the group and the council, or the, sorry, the council and the area badge. Like she's got Candlestick staff badge or whatever, right? And so at some point I wound up asking about it, and this is pre-COVID, but I couldn't tell you exactly when, but it was like, okay, wait, that exists? And which is, I think that was the card that I handed in the SDGs tent, was that, you know, I'm sure Candlestick has wonderful discoverability within Europe, but like, if I'd have known about this place in 2004, you know, I'd have probably taken a semester off of university to try and get accepted here. You know, I learned about it kind of, it's a little bit harder. I mean, it's hard enough to walk away from a desk job or, you know, a recent marriage and a 9-to-5, you know, I've got a wife, 4 kids, steady job. I can't just tell all of that. See you in 3 months, you know? So some regrets there, I guess, but like, I kind of feel like maybe the center doesn't have the visibility it should outside of that European context, which is kind of regrettable.
Yeah.
I don't know if
there's... I guess I can talk from my council level. So I live in a part of the U.S. I live in the southeastern U.S., like 4 hours south of Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And... a lot of military bases around where I live, so I actually have a lot of scouts who come from Transatlantic Council and Far East Council. And so basically what those are the Boy Scouts of America has basically set up our program on military bases.
Oh, for overseas abroad. Service.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so Transatlantic Council, which is all of Europe and Africa and supports our military and Department of Defense families abroad, actually runs their summer camp out of Candlestick for 2 weeks, and it's called Camp Alpine, but they also run their Klondike Derby out of Candlestick in the winter. And so I have quite a few older scouts in my council who have come back and talked about their experience at KISC and some of their experiences living and scouting abroad. But I don't think that my council particularly has done the best job at promoting international opportunities. And so it's just cool to be here. And when I get back, to be able to have the opportunity to do more promotion to scouts about what KISC is and what it's like to be here. But I think that, you know, it's hard being North American sometimes, because sometimes we feel disconnected from the rest of the world scouting community.
I would
just
agree.
Because of, like,
they're so close to each other.
They're so close to each other, and we can drive for 8 hours and be in the same state or province.
Yes, exactly.
that sometimes it's hard for us and hard to just, like, make those connections and be able to make those within reach for our scouts.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, the distance alone, you're right, is like hugely daunting. You know, like where I am in Alberta, there's an amazing scout camp called Impiza in the very south part of the province. I've been there exactly once for a jamboree, again, as staff. And every time I tell my scouts about it, even scouts I've already told about it, all I get back is, what's Impiza? Because I'm fine with it, but I can't get any of my other scouters to commit to the 5-hour drive past Pincher Creek to actually get to the darn place. Because, you know, it's just that vast of a country that, yeah, like you say, you drive for 5, sometimes 8 hours, and you haven't even left the state, province, whatever it is. Whereas, you know, I remember talking with like a friend in France about family trip to British Columbia. And he's like, wait, you drove how far? I'm like, 1,200 kilometers one way. It's like, if I did that from France, I wouldn't be in France.
Yeah. And that's like the funny thing of being here too, is that we'll be like, oh, 3 hours, that's a day trip. And yeah. all of some of
and
the
everybody's
other staff,
looking weird at
it
you.
It was like, yeah. 3 hours, that's a weekend. I'm not driving 3 hours for a day trip or traveling 3 hours for a day trip. And that just like is so like genuinely such like a North American and like Australian and other like
yeah.
large country things that a lot of people don't like grasp how large our countries are.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, like you say, time doesn't exist here, but especially when that's your framework, you know, like we went and saw Gruyere, but we didn't do it through the bus booking here because we wanted to take my wife along too. So we just hopped the train. It's like 2 and a quarter, or it's like two hours 40, I think, to get there if you catch all your connections. I don't see that as particularly long, but yeah, you talk to like some
easy.
Of the, yeah, but I'm talking to like, you know, a German scout and he's just like, you nuts? Yeah. Like, you're right. Like it's just, time doesn't exist. And the size of these, of countries sometimes sort of distorts your perception of distances and travel. So, I guess too. So how does one apply to become a Pinky? Because we've talked about like the how you threw your name in the hat and sort of the impacts that's had on your lives. But like, what do you actually have to do? Like, is it just go to the KISC website and click apply now? Or is there more to it?
So there's 4 seasons at KISC. So you have spring, summer, fall, and winter. And so basically what happens is they put out an open call for each of those seasons and the application is open for about a month. And you have to submit basically like a personal letter of why you want to come to KISC, a video of you talking in like a 2-minute video, why you want to come to KISC in English, because one of the requirements is you have to be able to communicate in English. And then like just some minor like,
a resume.
Oh, your resume. That's right. Two-page resume.
And also a letter from your National Scout Organization just saying you're an active member.
Oh, the letter of recommendation, I think we call it back home. Something like that.
I don't know. That's what I emailed them asking for and they gave it to me.
Yeah. I think I have one in my email too because, you know, coming here, I would need one as well if anyone wanted to challenge me on that.
I think we call them international letters of introduction.
Yeah.
ESA is what we call them.
Okay. That's a lot.
And a picture of yourself.
Yeah. That is a fair bit.
Yeah, and the application for each season opens like 6 months before the season, or it closes 6 months before the season starts. So our applications ended the beginning of January.
Wow, okay. And they would have opened in like what?
December.
Oh, okay.
December. Yeah, so applications stay open for about a month. And then basically they say we'll get back to you in a month-ish. And then from there, if you get accepted, you basically sign that you have accepted this position and like you agree to volunteer at KISC and agree to the standards at KISC. And then the center submits to the Canton of Bern visa support letters. And then once you get those visa support letters, then you have to do whatever the visa process for your country is. So for me, I had to mail my passport along with my support letter, an actual visa application, and some other stuff to the Swiss embassy in DC.
Wow.
And then pray that the U.S. mail wouldn't lose my passport.
Yeah, well, you know, just minor inconvenience of that.
As a Canadian, it's the same thing for your visa. I had to get like a prepaid envelope through Canada Post that included a prepaid envelope for them to return it back to
me. Yes.
And it includes the application, my visa, the letter that the center gave me. I also had to include a, it's not a check, but I can't remember what it's called, but like I gave the bank, I was like, here's this money. And they're like, okay, this is paid to this person. I can't remember.
A cashier's check.
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I did this all on my lunch break.
And then I had to mail that in to the Swiss embassy, even though I worked 15 minutes away from it. They did not want me going in person.
No, I can see that being a
Yeah. Wow. So yeah, I mailed that in, and then within a week I got my visa or my passport back, and it had a visa in it. So
wow.
They cool. also gave me back my check. Don't know if that was supposed to happen.
Deposit. We'll call it a deposit. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So that is a pretty intensive process. And like, do you have a sense of like, you know, you talk about like having to put together a resume. Do you have a sense of like the things that they're really looking for? No, not really.
When I was asked this earlier, I think the only thing, like the only prerequisite you need to volunteer at the center is that you're passionate about scouting and helping other people.
Yeah.
Anything else that you can bring to the table is an added benefit. Like my education and my history with hiking and teaching programming definitely gave me a great boost to being an activity guide and having my position here. But like, I know people who are climbing guides at home and they're working in catering and loving their life. And like, if you have additional things, that's awesome. But you don't need to have anything fancy. No. There are people here who are fresh out of high school. They're just 18 and they care about scouting and they want to help people and they want to make international friendships. So they're here.
Yeah. Nice. And I think it's important to know that like, program-wise, you don't have to have a background in it. So I live at sea level, and I'm a hiking guide in the Swiss Alps.
Wow. That's a bit of a change.
Just a little bit. And like most of my hiking is done in the Appalachian Mountains, which are not high. Yeah.
Beautiful, but not particularly high.
Or on like flat ground, because I'm a cub leader, and they're 7.
Also that.
They're going to give you the skills that you need. They're going to teach you the skills that you need to safely do your job.
No matter what area that you're working in, they give you basic cooking skills. They give you the basic cleaning skills, everything that you need. They offer it.
And you may not be the ones to comment on this, but like, did you find that like the amount of institutional knowledge that needed to be passed on was retained and passed on? Because like when you have essentially a complete staff turnover every 3 months, there is always the risk that, you know, that know-how and that, you know, the ins and outs of things can wind up getting lost, because depending on how long the transition between seasons is, right, like there may not necessarily be enough time for everything that's in somebody's head to get poured out on paper or in words to the next person. Loaded question.
So when we talk about our positions, we are short-term staff. So we STS is our abbreviation.
Okay.
And then there are also long-term staff positions. So these people also wear pink, but they work here from anything from 4 months to years. There's someone who's here who's been here for like 5 years or something.
Well, I think Jack's been here for a while too, hasn't he? That might be different again.
The director,
he's
been here, I think, 3-ish years.
I think okay. so.
Because he was just coming on when I originally got accepted.
Ah, okay.
So those people, they have like manager and supervisor positions.
Okay.
So there's like one person who's the head of house, and then there's two assistants to him. And so like these are the people that they would train the house workers, and they would give them all of the knowledge that they need.
Okay.
And then they train multiple seasons and so forth.
Okay, good.
And so from the program side of it, so our program director is here for 3 years. So that's a 3-year position. And so as they turned over from program director to program director, there is a training period for the new program director.
Okay.
And so then that knowledge from the program director is then passed on to the shorties. And like very specifically, I think this is more of a summer thing, because summer and winter is when we run the most program at the center. Those are our two high seasons, as we call them. And then the low seasons in spring and fall are more so work parties of scouts coming from different countries to do service projects around the center.
Oh, interesting.
And summer and winter is when you have scout groups coming to participate in the program of KISC.
Interesting. Okay, and so you've mentioned a few different like work term durations there. So are all pinkies always on a 3 month, or are like, could you say get accepted for a 6 month or a year?
So short-term staff is always 3 months.
Okay.
And then long-term staff, it depends on the position.
Okay.
But they're here for at least 4 months and could be 3 to 5 years.
Okay. So those are the... Okay. Just because I know these are questions that if my daughter ever puts her name in the hat, I'm going to be asked. Yeah. So it's nice to have the answers to them well ahead of time. I guess on that note, I'm assuming minimum 18 years of age to apply.
Yes. Yeah. So we're both on the older end of our season. And like we've had two people that like legitimately, like one person officially graduated high school during training week.
Wow.
So it's definitely, I think there's a 10-year age gap between the youngest shorty and the oldest shorty. But it's cool because at the end of the day, like, we're still all scouts, and that's the one thing that connects us. So yeah. Even though there is that big age gap, there's still things that we have in common.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's, you know, it's a little bit different at that point than, you know, having a 10-year age gap between, you know, an 18-year-old and a cub who's 8, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, yes, you know, you're from like an 18-year-old to a 28-year-old, you know, you would hope that the 28-year-old has accrued a bit of maturity and life experience that they are able to share. But fundamentally, you know, it's not the same thing as like an adult and a child. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're on a bit of a more level playing field there. And yeah, I mean, you can kind of relate to each other just through that sort of common love of hopefully a shared love of scouting that goes back a while, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like Sam said, the biggest thing you have to work here is like a real passion for scouting, because if you're not really passionate about scouting and what scouting does for like young people and scouters, then you're going to have a hard time here, because every day is all about scouting and what this movement does for people. Mm-hmm. And if you're not super passionate about it, it could be isolating. Like we obviously both love scouting. I do far too many jobs in scouting, like most scouters do.
It happens.
And like my coworkers literally call scouting my full-time unpaid job.
So, it is real.
But that love of scouting is just super important to have to work here.
I can't help but agree. Like, you know, this is my first time here, and just like drinking it in and seeing, like you say, that the passion of all the staff, and just like really the passion that it seems to inspire, just like generally, right? Like, I kind of, I'm trying to like urge the Canadian scouts to like do more. Like, you know, tonight, just basically as I'm coming to meet you, you know, my daughters are walking beside me and I'm like, I think they're doing woggle making over in the social cafe. I think I saw some Scottish scouts like tying things around a chair leg. Like, go introduce yourselves and learn how to do that. You know, I mean, jamborees are special for that anyways, and like bringing the world together in scouting adventures. But just, I think any chance to come here probably is going to afford a person to, you know, always be meeting scouts from somewhere that they are not from. Mm-hmm. And getting a chance to know them really well. But yeah, I can't see how you could do well not bringing your passion here, because like and the setting helps with that too, right? Like you can't help but be awestruck, you know. You arrive in Kandersteg and just like even that little trip, 20-minute walk or 5-minute bus trip up the hill to Kandersteg, like you can't help but be awestruck at not only you know, wow, there it is, like the place that BP established for scouting, but also just like the sheer beauty of the surroundings and being able to drink it all in.
I think that I get to be especially lucky being a hike guide, because every day I like, these mountains are my office.
Yeah.
And so like I joke that I climb mountains to eat food in cool places. and it's kind of true. But I have the same turkey sandwich every time I go hiking. It's getting kind of old, but you know, we find ways to make it work. But like it never, like people always ask, oh, does it get old? Like, do your hikes get old? Do you get tired of your hikes? No, because even though like they might not notice it, like I am hiking 5 days a week. And so like I'm seeing the like real time changes in like, oh, the snow melted on this hike, and this is the first time I've done this hike with no snow. this is weird, but cool. This is what it actually looks like. Or like, oh, like we had so much rain last week that this part of the trail got washed out and they're having to reestablish it. Or, oh, there was a rock fall here. Like, we need to like let other people know, because those are like the big things that we worry about here. Mostly rock falls.
Yeah, I get that impression. I mean, when you're literally like, you know, this mountain, it's, you know, it's a lot of risk for that, I'm sure. And then too, I imagine like, you know, the rain that we've been getting significant amounts of over the last few days here probably has some I've noticed like with the creek, or well, the river kind of running under the bridge there. It's like, oh, it looks a little lower today. It was a little higher the other day.
Sometimes you look at the Cander and wow, it's dark brown filled with mud. Like, it's not water anymore. It's just mud. And other days it's low and a beautiful blue and you're like,
yeah, got that yes. Glacial silt
from the glacier. Happening. Yes. Yeah.
From the Cander fern.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And it's funny too. Like, you know, to my eye and probably to yours as well, like that mountain water is like, it's instantly recognizable. You look at it and you're like, that came down a mountainside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That.
Yeah, just, you know, that siltiness and the way it's just, it's that particular blue that it becomes on a nice clear day. Like, oh, beautiful, beautiful.
As my bio says on the website, I traded the North Shore Mountains for the Swiss Alps.
And I mean, I have to say, it does feel oddly familiar here, you know. I don't think before now I really understood, you know, Luke Skywalker's line about Dagobah feeling strangely familiar, but I get it, I think, a little bit now, because like, you know I'm not in BC, but I kind of feel like I almost could be.
Yeah.
There's not blackberries trying to take everything over though, so. So, well, that's, that is amazing. I mean, I would hope for anybody, you know, who is genuinely passionate about scouting, you know, I guess this is the point where I should encourage people to say, you know, when you hear of it, if Kandersteg's opening up, you know, recruitment for a season, I mean, consider putting your name in the hat, because I think too, like the center kind of sustains itself on the enthusiasm of its volunteers, probably by design. And you kind of then need those enthusiastic volunteers to, you know, keep being willing to step up and put their name in the hat and show up.
Yeah. And then a lot of volunteers, especially the ones that live in Europe, after they're done being pinkies, you'll see them around the center wearing green. And they'll be here for a week or two as helpers, going back to help in the areas where they worked.
Oh, cool.
Or they come for shorty training to help run the center while all the new shorties are being trained. And it's just that continued love of Kandersteg that, like, the joke is that that we just keep coming back. And I think we've seen that this year. We have a lot of helpers who have, this is like they did a short term season and now they come back every summer.
Wow.
To help.
That would be a fun life to lead.
If only we lived so close to Switzerland. Right.
If only it was a mere train ride away.
It's only a 8-hour flight plus a connection to whatever,
wherever else we come from.
Yeah.
Wherever else we come from. And a 6-hour time difference for me.
8 hours for me, 9 hours for you, probably.
9 hours.
Yeah. And yeah. So I think it's about 9.5 hours from Vancouver. That's where we flew out of. Mm-hmm. Of course, Air Canada. So you're risking lost luggage and all the other good stuff.
Yeah. I flew 5 hours from Vancouver to Toronto and then Toronto to Zurich, which was 8. So.
Oh, okay. I don't know if that's worse or better.
Worse. I had to be in Pearson International.
Say no more. I try and avoid that place. So.
I flew through there once.
Oh, condolences.
So sorry.
Yeah. Condolences. Did you get stuck there? Did you have to stay overnight?
I did not, but I got stuck on an airplane in the tarmac trying to get off my plane to make a connection back to the States.
Sounds right.
And then I had to pour out my water that I had gotten on the plane while going through TSA in Canada, which I still don't understand, but whatever.
Yeah, I don't. Who can make sense of TSA rules? I try not to. But anyways, well, thank you both so much for just sitting down and like giving at least a brief overview of, you know, who the Pinkies are and what the experience of becoming one is like and then being one is like. I mean, you both sound incredibly enthusiastic about the role. And I'm very happy for both of you at, you know, getting accepted and forging what seems like an absolutely awesome lifelong friendship.
Definitely friends for life.
Yeah.
Sam's coming to visit me in March to help me with the scouter training that I run.
Wow.
Our other roommate from Australia, she's got some more time before she needs to go home back to work. And she'll be stopping and visiting Laura in the States. And then she's coming up to visit me in Vancouver.
Wow.
Before going to other places and going home.
That
and she's
going to
go
insane.
Visit a bunch of the other shorties who live in
places.
Yeah, South America. Yeah. Because she's doing like 4 or 5 Latin American countries.
Awesome.
So.
And I guess actually too, I guess I should ask because like Sam was mentioning, apparently you are a regular listener.
Yes.
Regular-ish?
Ish. While I'm walking my dog.
Oh, wow. Well, that's hilarious.
This is what happens when you can't sleep at night and start Googling scouting podcasts.
Well, I mean, that's why I decided to start one. You know, no offense to, at the time, BSA was producing really great podcasts. Weirdly, they aren't now anymore. I don't know what happened there. I don't know if I need to know. Well, I have been following that news, yeah. And then, like, I also know, but, like, Clark Green was doing his podcast as well, and I don't know what happened with that one. So it's weird to, like, you know, have been, like, the fourth place and now to be the only one. That's weird. But thank you for listening, because that's, like, it's always awesome to meet somebody who's, like, familiar with the podcast as well.
Yeah, I think, like, as a Cub Scouter and just, like, what I do, I try to bring in the international stuff into my Cub group. And like 13 7-year-olds trying to listen about scouting in other countries is more interesting when you are like, oh, in Canada you would be a beaver.
Yeah.
But we're in the States, so you are a cub. And yep. You're like, wait, I want to be a beaver. And it's just funny to like listen to them like try to process and like scouting in different areas and even like getting different ideas for like programming. Is cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, and thank you out there for listening. And until next time, y'all, be prepared.